Segment 2, Karen Fisher. For Education Matters, I'm Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the City of Racine Parks Recreation and Cultural Services is hosting a free drop-in playground program for kids ages 7 to 14. Sites are opened 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday. Call 636-9131.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters. Today, we hear from the two Democratic candidates for the 1st Congressional District of Wisconsin for the United States House of Representatives. They square off in the primary election on Tuesday, August 11th. The winner will face Paul Ryan's successor in the seat, Brian Stile, in the November 3rd general election. The 1st Congressional District in southeastern Wisconsin covers Kenosha County, Racine County, and most of Walworth County, as well as portions of Rock, Waukesha, and Milwaukee counties. The population of the district is 718,000 people. Their median income is $67,000 a year. And the district covers 1,700 square miles. Welcome to the two candidates, both attorneys, Josh Paid and Roger Pollack. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, thank you.
We'll follow our usual format with opening and closing statements by the candidates. I'll ask questions in between, and they'll alternate in responding. And I've allowed them to submit one question each for to be asked of the other, and I'll be getting to that a little bit later in the program. First, gentlemen, your opening statements. Please describe your qualifications and main reason for running. You have up to 2 minutes. First, by a coin toss, just before recording this program on Thursday, July 23rd, is Josh Paid.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Thank you for WGTD for hosting. Thank you, Roger, for doing this. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. My name is Josh Paid. I'm running for Congress because we need to change Washington. We are dealing with an economic, political crisis. Our democracy is threatened. People's livelihoods and their future are threatened, and they're frustrated by DC insiders and Washington politicians who have let them down for far too long. And they're looking for a real agent of change to fight and restore opportunity here in southeastern Wisconsin. I was born and raised in Kenosha. I grew up in a middle-class family. My grandparents taught me so much. They've been here since, my grandpa's family has been here since the 1830s, and they were early union organizers who taught me about fighting for working people, about solidarity. And I remember the proudest moment of my life was coming home with my union card and showing my grandpa. In fact, I kept that card in my wallet till it disintegrated. My family's life was upended because we lost both our parents growing up. My dad died when I was young, and then my mom a few years later. For me, that meant having to put off school, becoming a businessman. And I worked for a family grocery company in Wisconsin, traveled around the state, and I learned the values of leadership, servant leadership, of building community and helping families. I made a promise to my mom before she died that if I could come through everything that our family came through, that I would help families like ours. And that's what I did. I worked my way through school and law school. I went and fought for Wisconsin families. I interned for Senator Feingold in Washington, D.C., where I both learned and also was an advocate for families and policies that could help people here back home. I came back home. I worked my way through law school. I graduated during the financial crisis, and I worked hard to ensure that we'd have a financial system that works for people. I volunteered to help people stay in their homes, and along the way, I worked in global operational risk and crisis management.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And now we're going to turn to the opening statement from Roger Pollack. Roger.
Hey, thank you, Len, and thank you to the listeners out there. Thank you for hosting me. And thank you as well to Josh for being here. It's a fantastic opportunity to speak to all of you, and especially in the coronavirus pandemic, it's not always easy to reach a lot of voters. And so thank you all for listening. So my name is Roger Pollack. I was born and raised in Racine, Wisconsin. I grew up in a lower-income family where we struggled substantially to make ends meet. You know, I know what it's like to come from a family where your mom works three jobs to keep a roof over your head, and your dad deals with substantial mental health issues. And, you know, we struggled to pay the bills and to make ends meet, but I persevered and ended up going to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, graduating from there, and then joining the intelligence community. I served our country. I have a history of service. I spent 10 years working on national security issues. I deployed to a war zone for almost 2 years, serving our country as a civilian intelligence analyst and leading the intelligence directorate of a unit focused on stopping funding to the Taliban and insurgency. I went to law school at night when I returned home from that, and also worked on the Iran nuclear deal. So I have experience working on some of the nation's most critical foreign policy and national security issues. And I'm in this race, and it's personal for me. You know, like I said, I grew up in a low-income family, and I think our politicians that have been representing this district for the last 20 years have been focused on the needs of corporate special interest groups and large corporations. And that needs to change, and I'm going to change that when I go to Washington. So thank you all for listening. And I am going to be focused on healthcare, bringing down the cost of pharmaceutical prices, and increasing access to high-quality jobs in this district.
Thank you. Now for my questions. I've asked the candidates to be brief, under a minute and a half. If I think that they have more to say, or I want to probe a little more deeper, I'll give them a second round and maybe ask a follow-up question. Gentlemen, the median annual income is $67,000 in our first congressional district. That doesn't sound awfully bad, but it disguises the fact that a recent United Way of Wisconsin study showed that in this district, a quarter to a third of the families, depending on the county, are living in poverty or near poverty, unable to afford food, housing, and health security. Tell us one specific piece of legislation you would fight for in the House of Representatives to directly benefit the families of the district. And we'll turn now to Josh.
Thank you, Dave. That's a big reason why I'm in this race, is to restore economic opportunity. It has been a policy focus of mine for a long time. For me, it's not just one policy, but it's the priorities. So we need to restore education and opportunity. We need to build an ecosystem of the economy that focuses on both infrastructure, education, and rebuilding our mid-sized cities. One of the things that we've seen since the last recession is tremendous geographic inequality in addition to class inequality. Many of our cities that built up around factories have been unable to fully recover from that. I've been focused on that both as a citizen and as a candidate, both right here in Kenosha, as well as around the district, on how we attract new companies and keep people here. As a member of Congress, my priority will be to rebuild the middle class, make it easier to join a union, make it easier for people to get new education and pivot to new jobs and higher paying jobs, so that when the factory closes or moves or economy shifts, they can move into a higher paying job. The third thing we need to focus on is reforming our unemployment insurance system to really make it an opportunity to make people better off than they were before they lost their jobs. That's something that's been exposed by this pandemic. It's something that we truly need to fix, both from the policy side as well as the functional administrative side with people with backlogs. And those would be my priorities to get changed when I go to Congress.
Thank you. All right, your response.
Yeah, thank you. So a huge priority for me would be healthcare. We're in a country where too many people, and in this district, too many people have to choose between, are they going to get a certain procedure done or deplete their resources, you know, deplete their investment, their savings rather. And for me, you know, that's also a personal issue. I grew up in a family where we were on low quality insurance throughout most of my childhood, and paying for my dad's mental health bills was a huge burden on the family and a huge cause, a source of anxiety. And so I think we need to focus on having universal healthcare coverage, that's quality universal healthcare coverage, and low prescription drug prices for the people of Southeastern Wisconsin and for the people of the United States. So I will be voting for bills that improve upon the Affordable Care Act and ensure, again, that we recognize universal health care being a human right in this country, and that we actually do do something about it from a legislative perspective to make that a reality.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, we're going to continue with Mr. Pollack on our next question. Why do you feel, Mr. Pollack, that the incumbent Republican Brian Stile must go out of style, must be replaced by you and not your opponent in this primary?
I'm gonna use that line during the campaign, but no, you know, Brian Stile has taken over $500,000 in contributions from corporate special interest groups since he's been in office to finance his reelection campaign. He's taken nearly $200,000 from the financial institutions that he's supposed to be regulating on the Financial Services Committee that he serves on. And he voted against the first Coronavirus Relief Act, and he voted against efforts that would allow the U.S. government to negotiate on behalf of pharmaceutical companies to lower the cost of prescription drug prices for Medicare and Medicaid patients. And I think that shows that he is not looking out for the needs of the people of southeastern Wisconsin.
Yeah, but why am I supposed to vote for you? The question is, why am I supposed to vote for you?
Yeah, so you take the inverse of that. I'm not taking any corporate PAC funding. I am running a grassroots campaign, and we have a strong team that is set up to win this election. And I am going to be a proponent of universal health care. I'm going to be a proponent of bringing jobs to southeastern Wisconsin that are family-supporting jobs, and also a proponent of increasing access to education. There are great educational needs here in southeastern Wisconsin. That doesn't mean four-year universities for everyone. That means increasing access to vocational school, the technical school.
Okay, well, I have to stop you there. But I really wanted to know why I should vote for Roger Pollack or Josh Pade. That's what I was trying to get at. I'm going to ask you now, Mr. Pade, why should I be voting for you to replace the Republican incumbent instead of your opponent? Because we're not at the general election yet.
Thank you, Dave. You know, what I found out on the trail, what I've learned, is people ask two questions. Who are you fighting for, and how are you gonna get it done? And, you know, we can go off the list. Brian Stile has been terrible. He's sided with Donald Trump. He's voted against healthcare, voted against people, voted against economic opportunity, voted against saving people in the pandemic. He has voted wrong. And what we learned in this last election, fighting and organizing, is that telling people how bad the Republicans are isn't the way to win. It's telling them what you're going to do and what you're for. And I've been doing that. That's how I was able to help organize and help get some of those wins and engage with new Democrats in the last couple of years here in Wisconsin. And why I'm the best person. People in Wisconsin, people in the first district, are so tired of Washington politicians, of people just saying the same checkpoints, of doing the talking points. But at the end of the day, they're DC establishment types. And I am the only DC outsider in this race who is truly going to provide the kind of new ideas that not just contrast with Stile, but bring our conversation to a new place. So that means, how do we really talk about reforming government, reforming the way it works? We want great things to happen. We want healthcare to happen. We want prescription drugs to be affordable. We want there to be new jobs. We want to innovate on climate change. These are all things that Democrats, independents, and yes, even a few Republicans are saying, why can't this get done? It can't get done because Washington has been taken over by politicians, by corporate lobbyists. And
okay,
I'm out there every day fighting
there
for change. Thank you.
This is Len Iaquinta moderating a forum between the two candidates for the Democratic primary in the 1st Congressional District. Now, let's move on to another big national issue. What does it mean to each of you gentlemen to update and reform policing to model standards? And what might that look like here in the district? And I think we have going next is Josh.
Thank you, Len. What we've seen in the last couple of months is a national awakening to what we need to do to reform police, to end that racial inequality in America, and really fulfill that promise that began in the civil rights movement, to do what the late John Lewis called as good trouble. And specifically to police reform, we need to bring our police into our communities in a good way. So I support the George Floyd Policing Act that was recently passed by the House. It needs to get through the Senate. It doesn't look like Mitch McConnell is going to do that, but we need to keep fighting for that, keep fighting into the next Congress to make that happen. We need to demilitarize the police. Since the 1980s, we have put surplus military gear into police forces that have invited escalations of violence. We need to provide the resources to ensure that police are trained well on de-escalation and ban no-knock warrants or regulate no-knock warrants and get rid of chokeholds. We need to focus on community policing, making sure that our police force both live in the communities that they police and look like the communities that they police. We need to start bringing people together and ending these divisions. And, you know, I remember personally a few years ago when Eric Garner, same thing, he died saying, "I can't breathe." And that moment passed and really nothing was done. We can't let this moment pass. We need to be persistent every day until we get these reforms passed.
Roger.
Thank you. No, I would have absolutely voted for the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. I would have been honored to co-sponsor that bill, in fact. I think there's a lot of great reforms that are in that bill. And I agree, we are in a time where there is an opportunity to take advantage of a situation that has perpetuated too long in this country, now for centuries, of racial injustice. And there's been incremental change, and we are on the precipice of what feels like another moment to live in a more perfect union. And some things in the bill that I especially appreciated were, of course, the banning use of chokeholds, creating a national use of force database that tracks police officers who have been involved in misconduct. And I think that what's important also in that bill is federal government increasing federal government oversight over local police forces to ensure that when police forces are not policing themselves, that there is another check on them. And that's hugely important to me. You know, I will say that greater accountability to the system is necessary. And again, Brian Stile, the Republican incumbent, voted against the efforts for greater accountability of our police forces under the guise that it would federalize police forces in the United States, and that's just not the case. That's not what the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act does. It does not federalize the police force. It offers a federal check, and I think that's hugely important. And dialogue between the police forces and community is hugely important.
Thank you very much. All right. My next question, we might extend this for a second round. We'll see how much you have to talk about. It's a big topic. Social justice. It's traditionally a very broad Democratic platform plank. Equity, diversion, inclusion, and reparations are currently high on the justice agenda. Pick one or more that you would champion as a priority, please. Diversity, equity, inclusion, and reparations. Mr. Pollack, why don't you start?
Thank you. So I think diversity and inclusion are hugely important, and hugely important in southeastern Wisconsin, and go to an issue that you brought up previously about the disparity in wealth, both here in the district and in other places around the country. I think a way to get at inclusion in our economy and making sure that our economy works for more people is homeownership. I think we need to increase homeownership locally and making sure that more people of color have access to credit to purchase homes and also lower income people as well. Homeownership is how the middle class stores and transfers wealth, and that opportunity has been cut off for people of color because of unfair lending practices, because of the way that credit is reviewed. I know this feels like in the weeds, but this is hugely important. Leaders in the community of color in southeastern Wisconsin that I've spoken to have stressed the need for closing the wealth disparity gap, and one way to do that is through increasing access to home ownership.
Thank you. Mr. Pate.
Thank you, Len. That is a very, very important question. And I think it's very present right now today. I think it was today, Ben Carson, the Trump administration, officially moved with reversing the rules for the AFFH. So it's the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing regulations, which essentially opens the door to bring back redlining. So the first thing you do is stop this tide of bringing back discrimination, both in housing as well as having a true Voting Rights Act. I look forward to co-sponsoring the John Lewis Voting Rights Act when I get to Congress, if it doesn't pass before then, which Mitch McConnell is going to do everything he can to not make that happen. But the first step is really to give the power and the voice to voters of all people, people of color that have been disenfranchised. Right here in Wisconsin, with voter ID, has disenfranchised thousands of African-American and Latino and people of color. And we need to fix that. We need a national standard, a new Voting Rights Act that expands voting. I believe in automatic voter registration. We need to solve the problems of wealth inequality and opportunity inequality. I spoke at a forum on this specifically a couple of years ago at Ward 4 in Milwaukee, talking about how we need to specifically expand programs through the SBA, the Small Business Administration, on giving people of color and women access to the kinds of capital that people from privilege have when they start a business. And we call it the friends, family, and fools. And it's something that if I get to Congress, I hope I can serve on the Small Business Committee and really spearhead an effort to bring a whole new generation of people of color into the opportunity to start a business, to grow, to get education, to expand their wealth.
Thank you. Now, I asked each of the gentlemen to submit a question or two for their opposite, and that I would pick from among those submitted. They each submitted three questions to me, and I've picked one of each to ask the other. Mr. Pade asks Mr. Pollack, people have grown cynical with Washington, feeling ignored regardless of who is elected. Will you commit to closing the loopholes on revolving door access between government, corporate lobbyists, and Congress, and commit to real campaign finance reform, including full transparency? And I'll ask, give us some details. Mr. Pollack.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. Thank you for that question, Josh. I think one way to do this is through the American Anti-Corruption Act, which has in it, amongst it, would prohibit taking funds from PACs and lobbyists out of the political calculation. We need to do that in our government. We do need to close the revolving door. I love the fact that it puts time limits or time considerations on the amount of time between serving and being a lobbyist. I think the way that our system is set up through funding campaigns via PACs and lobbyists is the root of all evil in this country. You know, we have a system in place where it's difficult to get anything big done because people are beholden to corporate PACs and corporate special interests. And I have pledged to take the N Citizens United pledge, and I'm not taking a dime from corporate PACs, and believe that, you know, we do need to institute changes like the American Anti-Corruption Act. And I would absolutely support that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Pollack submitted this question for Mr. Pade. So I'll read the question. You ran for governor in 2018 and got less than 1% of the vote, says Mr. Pollack. What makes you think that you are the candidate that can take on Brian Stile this November? Mr. Pade?
Thank you for that question, Roger. I am very proud of the work that we've done here as Democrats for the last 4 years. Getting off after Donald Trump won, knowing that I had to be off the sidelines, working and organizing, and having worked for a company around the state of Wisconsin, going back to those communities and talking to many folks, there was a missing gap. People weren't being touched by Democrats for years. So we got on the ground, and what I wanted to do is bring new ideas and reach out to Democrats that hadn't been touched before. It was a crowded primary, but many people were not being touched. And what we needed to do was expand that idea base, And that's something that's very Wisconsin. It's something that I was proud. I learned so many lessons and really learned that there are so many ideas that people are talking about that are getting ignored. Too often we have politicians that come up with these ideas in DC, in the bubble, and then they come out and try to push them on voters. And what we need to do is be taking ideas from the voters and bringing them back. And I was proud that we were able to be a part of a movement across the state with so many people stepping up, so many people supporting other Democrats that pushed and helped us win all those statewide races back in 2018. And that really here built a movement where, you know, the last couple years, people were saying, Josh, the kind of ideas you're talking about, the experience you've had going to advocate for Wisconsin families, that's the kind of change that we need here in Wisconsin to bring to DC. We don't need another DC politician.
Thanks very much. All right. Now we're going to get back to Len Iaquinta's questions. I'm acting here for our listeners as moderator of this forum between the Democratic primary candidates, Josh Pade and Roger Pollack, competing to run against Brian Stile, the incumbent Republican, representing the 1st Congressional District in the general election in the fall. Gentlemen, and I'm going to ask this of Mr. Pade to respond first. What, if any, concerns do you have about the conducting of the primary and general elections? What should be done immediately? What legislation would you support if you get to the House of Representatives?
So then, could I ask for a clarification? Are you asking specifically towards the pandemic or voting in general?
I'm asking for the pandemic, the Russians, the whoever else.
Okay.
The Republicans, yeah. The Russians, the Chinese, the list is endless.
Okay. So let's break this down. The immediate effect is the pandemic. Congress, and this is going to be before November, so I wouldn't be in Congress yet, but Congress needs to immediately, and they've already tried to pass this in the House, but it needs to get through the Senate, to give localities the resources they need and make sure that the post office is preserved and is able to carry on voting by mail, absentee voting by mail, allowing resources so that people can vote, if they have to vote in person, can do so safely. And that should be done. We've learned a lot of lessons. We learned it by the Republicans irresponsibly conducting an election in April. And we've had some reform, but we need to have a clear standard that makes sure that everyone can vote. Now, protecting our elections. It is very clear, particularly from Russia, that they want to undermine Western democracy. And we have gone through years of, you know, seeing this president be willing to trade national security for political gain and allow foreign countries to interfere with our elections. We need election protection. We need to ensure and put better controls in place to ensure that Russia can't do again what it did. That's both for our elections, is also how they were able to manipulate social media. These are things that we need to pursue and go after. The third thing is, ultimately, we need automatic voter registration. The Selective Service can find you when you turn 18 and tell you to register. We can find people when they turn 18 and have them registered to vote.
Thank you.
Reduces
fraud.
Thank you.
Mr. Pollack.
Yeah, thank you. You know, one thing, I guess, just addressing first voter security as it relates to foreign influence. You know, there was a push to pass a bill that would automatically sanction countries that were found to interfere in our elections. And I am fully supportive of that. And that's been blocked by the Senate, by Mitch McConnell. Those are the types of things we need to put in place so that countries know we are serious, that if they meddle in our elections, we're going to come after them with economic sanctions. And I used to draft economic sanctions packages when I was working in national security to protect our country. So that's absolutely something that should be done and should have been done already. As it relates to the pandemic, we need to make sure that localities have the resources they need to hold elections. I agree that the United States Postal Service needs to be funded, and that, you know, the American Anti-Corruption Act that I referenced before also has provisions in there about automatic voter registration. And I love that. I think we definitely need to institute that into our system. And, you know, when people show up to register vehicles or have any sort of government interaction, there should be an option to register to vote so that it's not this arduous process. And I also believe that individuals who have been incarcerated need to have their voting rights restored, and that's something that also should be done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There's a little bit of background noise. You might try to speak up a little bit to overcome that, but I did make you out. Now, Mr. Pollack, you're going to be the first to answer this next question. What federal actions in the time of this COVID-19 plague are needed to help health care providers and hospitals in the 1st Congressional District? What kind of legislation do you support? Mr. Pollack.
Thank you. You know, we are obviously in the midst of this pandemic that has ravaged the country, and the leadership that we've seen, both from the president and from the representative here, Brian Stile, has been tremendously lacking. You know, and I think we need legislation that provides the resources that hospitals and healthcare providers need. Specifically, you know, there used to be a system in place to store and accumulate necessary PPE, and I think we need to enact legislation to make sure that if another pandemic hits, there's not this scramble for ventilators and PPE and other necessary equipment that's needed. We also need to make sure that healthcare providers, people who are on the front lines during this pandemic, have the healthcare or have the child care coverage that they need in times of pandemic, so that they can further their work to keeping us all safe without worrying about how their children are going to be taken care of. And so stimulus funding for that should be an absolute priority. So, those would be the two things that I would certainly champion, making sure that hospitals and healthcare providers have the resources they need, and financial increases to financial benefits during times of pandemic like this, so they're not worried about making them need and taking care of their children while they're taking care of us.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Page, your response.
Thanks, Len. This is such a critical question. I spent years working in global operational risk and crisis management, actually worked on a couple pandemics, as well as tabletop exercises with public-private partnerships on pandemic response. It was terrible that the Trump administration disbanded the Obama Pandemic Response Task Force that had existed previously, and we need a full-scale response plan. And immediately to this current crisis, getting those resources out, implementing smarter demand management systems so that as different areas surge with the need, they can quickly respond to getting those resources, whether it's PPE or even personnel. My brother-in-law actually volunteered to go work at a surge hospital during this pandemic. He is a nurse. And being able to quickly identify those folks and get them, because I've personally talked to healthcare workers here in the district who have been laid off, because while some areas of healthcare are overtaxed, other areas are not being utilized. And it is a big open area that needs to be reformed in how we work with our providers and ensuring that we can have a sustainable healthcare system for everyone across the country and have the resources in place. Going beyond this pandemic, we should have a full kind of after action report and develop a stronger crisis management task force that coordinates with local governments, private entities, whether it's healthcare providers, et cetera.
Thank you very much. I have to stop you there. Mr. Pade, you'll start with the next question. What about help for the small and family businesses that are still tragically squeezed and will be for an unforeseen amount of time by this uncontrolled virus still in southeastern Wisconsin? Mr. Pade.
Thanks, Len. What I hope to see happen right away is an extension of the help that has been given directly tied to the status of the pandemic's impact on the economy. So I've personally spoken with small business owners and worked with small businesses. My wife has owned small businesses in the past. And one of the biggest problems or threats to a small business is uncertainty. What we need to do is take away that uncertainty and let people know that there will be help as long as the economy can't function because of the pandemic. And that will allow give employees the resources to sustain themselves through this pandemic and be in a position to recover fully afterwards. I've talked to so many people that they've put up their life savings. They've done anything just to try to survive a few months, and they don't know what's going to happen if we get to October. We need to get rid of that uncertainty. So we need to pass an extension, both for small businesses as well as those workers. We need to extend the pandemic unemployment. We need to pass another stimulus to help people that have had unneeded expenses that have come up because of this. If we do those things, and if we make it tied to how the pandemic response is going, then we will ensure that we recover from this pandemic stronger than we were before it started.
Thank you. Roger?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. You know, I think we need to put small businesses at the forefront of our response economically. And small businesses employ a large percentage of the U.S. labor force, and small businesses were disadvantaged in the first PPP distribution. The fact that small businesses were competing with large corporations for loans to help tide them by and to pay employees was a tremendous failure to small businesses and to small business employees. So I am for having a package particularly set aside for small businesses that meet a certain threshold number of employees and amount of revenue that they do not have to compete with large corporations for resources anymore. You know, we've seen that work in other countries, and you know, there should be a separate queue for small businesses to get the resources that they need. And you know, my wife owns a small business, and I know that this pandemic has been hugely problematic for her in keeping that going. And so we need to make sure that all small businesses have what they need, and that, you know, people of Southeastern Wisconsin depend on small businesses for meeting their daily needs and employment. So I absolutely support increasing access to for small businesses to increase access to capital. And I look forward to seeing that in this bill that's being currently debated in Congress right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pollack. Now, the next question is for Roger Pollack. Similarly, the needs of our families are multifold. Let's start with daycare for the very young. What are you advocating, Roger Pollack, for the very young for daycare?
You know, that issue is especially personal for me. I have a 3.5-year-old who has daycare needs. And throughout the pandemic, he is at home, which, you know, I'm running a campaign. My wife is working. Makes it very difficult. So I empathize with families out there who have young children and need to get back to work. I think if the question is, you know, daycare needs, how does that fit into pandemic response? I believe that, you know, we need to be very careful in how we reopen daycares. And I think looking forward, you know, federal funding for pre-K-3, which exists, many larger cities across the country have public school for PK-3 children. I think we should look at that in Southeastern Wisconsin and, you know, increase the time in which public school is available for children and look at having children who are daycare age, you know, 3 years, be able to access public education.
Thank you. Mr. Pade.
Thank you, Len. We need people in Congress who are going to put children and families first in everything that they do. And it's one reason why I got in this race to run for Congress, because they haven't been a priority in Washington for far too long. We know that one of the best investments that a government can make is in early childhood development. For every dollar you invest, you save $7 to $12, depending on the study, both in that person's livelihood as well as the economic impact on the community and government savings. We need universal pre-K in this country. We need paid family medical leave. We need allow people to have daycare and put those resources and benefits in place, and give people the flexibility, whether they're single moms, you know, having grown up for a time with a single mom before she passed away, it was a struggle, and we relied on grandparents, and not everyone has that blessing of having grandparents that can always watch. And now we're dealing with a situation with COVID where we have students that they don't know when they're going back to school. They don't know if they're going to do online learning, if they have the tools at home to be able to online learn. And too many moms and dads are having to struggle with the decision of going to work or watching their kids. And we need to, from the federal government, put in place programs that empower those folks, because what that means is that those kids will get a better education, the parents will be able to earn more money, and we will be better off in the long
run.
It's the kind of priorities that we need.
Thank you. All right. This has been very edifying, and now we're going to move on to your closing statements. I've asked each of the gentlemen to make a closing statement of 1 minute, and we're going to start with Mr. Roger Pollack, one of the two Democrats vying to be emerging from the primary to face off in the general election against Republican Brian Stile for the first Republican district seat. Mr. Pollack.
Thank you, Len, and thank you to the listeners out there who tuned in, and thank you to Josh for participating in this. This race is incredibly personal to me. You know, I'm a father of two children, a 3.5-year-old and 11-month-old, and there were so many issues affecting them going forward. We didn't touch on the environment here. I want to make sure that we have clean air and clean water for them and their generation, and I'm going to be fighting like mad to get that done in Congress. Racial justice reform, criminal justice reform, hugely important issue for me. And I have the background to represent Southeastern Wisconsin in Congress. I have worked on some of the most complex national security issues our country has faced. And I'm going to bring that expertise that allows me to be taken seriously day one in Congress to fight for the people of Southeastern Wisconsin so that people have access to good paying jobs, better education opportunities, and health care. It's extremely important. Those are my top priorities. Thank you.
All right. Your closing statement, Mr. Josh Paid.
Thank you, Len. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, WGTD, and everyone for listening. We always say this is the most important election of our lifetime, but it seems historic. And folks, you're going to be looking at your ballot. You're going to be wondering, and I've been talking to folks, how are we going to change Washington? How are we going to make Washington work for people here in Southeastern Wisconsin? How are we going to end the divisions and really make progress? And it's going to take a DC outsider. It's going to take someone who's been fighting and an agent for change for Wisconsin families. And that's what I've been doing. The challenges I've overcome, the work that I've done organizing here, whether it's fighting against Paul Ryan trying to take away our healthcare, or bringing in resurgence of Democratic voters, or just fighting for new ideas in the Democratic Party. That's what I've been doing. And that's how we're going to take it to Congressman Stile, who was just not the leader for this moment and has been unable to stand up to Donald Trump. We need real change. We need to bring new jobs.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I thank our first congressional district candidates, Roger Pollack and Josh Paid. It takes candidates vying for office to make this democracy real and vital. It's something we can touch and participate in. When there isn't a race, there's not an election, in my opinion. So listeners, please remember to vote as early and as safely as you can. I think I know what I need to do to complete my ballot downstairs on the kitchen island now. Remember, the primary election to choose among these two gentlemen is on Tuesday, August 11th. The winner will face Paul Ryan's successor in the seat, Brian Stile, in the Tuesday, November 3rd general election. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta, urging you to get involved in the election and to vote. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.